Hello, this is Michael Steed. In this podcast, I'm going to cover an introduction to inheritance tax. I've had quite a few questions about IHT and estate planning and so on and so forth in the last year or so. So I've decided in 2012 to do a series of podcasts on IHT to complement what I've been doing on the blogs. I've done some blogs on lifetime giving. So I just want to make sure that they all interact. Now, obviously, IHT is a vast topic. And in this first short podcast, I'm going to be covering and reminding you of just the basics. And then we'll move on to some more sort of detailed stuff. But where we're headed for is to be able to give reasonably competent advice on simple estate planning, because people ask us questions like, if I give my house to my kids and continue to live in it, is that okay? And one that I've certainly been asked by AAT members this year is, I'm worried about care home fees. Can I give the house to my children, and will that do the job? Well, we'll come back to that question in just a moment, because that's obviously one that will be of concern to quite a lot of people. And as far as the care home issue is concerned there, it's not just IHT, is it? It's what the local authority will view, and that's outside the scope of what we're trying to do today. But in this first podcast, I just want to have a general overview and just remind you of some core principles which will allow you to interact with your clients. And I think the first thing to do is to be able to remind clients that IHT not only has effect on death, but it also has effect in respect of lifetime gifts. So it's death gifts and lifetime gifts. The principal difference between the two is not IHT, it's the other capital tax, it's CGT. Because if I give something away in life, then it's two sides to the same coin. There's going to be an IHT and potentially CGT to consider as well. Not universally, as we will see, but I have to at least ask, are there CGT implications as well as are there IHT implications? But as far as death gifts are concerned, somebody dies, the executors wind the estate up and make the gifts under the will. In those circumstances, it's only going to be IHT. So we do first need to remind ourselves of that core distinction. Let's consider IHT on death. Now, we're all aware that we've got a nil rate band, and that's currently £325,000, and that hasn't shifted for a while, and that looks as though that's going to be around probably to at least 2015, unless the Chancellor has a change of heart. And then anything in your estate that's chargeable above that point is subject to a flat rate of 40%, so there's no progressivity there, as you say, have for income tax. So we've got a nil rate band of 325,000, and then we're going to be taxed at 40% flat on top of that. So that sounds fairly simple, but like everything in tax, it's nowhere near as simple as that when you start to drill down. I think the first thing to do is to recall that the £325,000 that you have as your nil rate band on death doesn't just cover the death estate. It also, as a clear and simple anti-avoidance issue, it covers all of the chargeable gifts that have been made in the previous 7 years. So it's, if you can imagine a timeline, you put a sort of stick in the sand at death, and then you walk back 7 years and put another stick in the sand, and then you look at all of the gifts that have been made within that 7 years. And broadly, things that fall outside the 7 years will not be taken into account. But I would just like to put a health caution on that, that where you have trusts involved and you've made previous gifts outside the 7 year window into discretionary trusts, then they will have an effect on what happens within that 7 year window. But I don't want to complicate that. I'll come on to trusts a bit later in this mini series. But what I'm looking to do now is just to understand that on death, you've got two sticks in the sand, one at death itself, and then you walk back 7 years and plant the other stick in the sand. That's the basic image I've got. Now, the £325,000 will then cover any lifetime gifts, and you stand at the back stick, which is the one 7 years back from death, and then you start with your £325,000 in your pocket to walk forward through the 7 years going up to death, and your £325,000 will then be eroded by all of the gifts that you've been made in that period. Now, it's not quite that simple, because some of the gifts will be so small as to be disallowed, and some of them are specifically exempted, such as gifts to charity, gifts to spouses, and so on and so forth. But that will come and cover in due course. But I just want to pick up this image, which I think is quite a useful one, of the two sticks, and then starting at the back stick and walking through the 7 years chronologically up to the death. And every time you've made a gift, say mum has died and she gave a house to her children, or she gave some cash to one of her children, then those gifts will erode the £325,000. So by the time you get to the death estate, you may easily end up in a situation where you haven't got very much of your £325,000 at all. And quite commonly, you've got nothing left, because it's all been eroded by the gifts that have been made in life in the previous 7 years. And that 7 year rule, of course, is there to stop people from offloading all of their assets a week before they die, and hence cheating the tax man. So he's going to be alive and alert to all gifts made in that 7 years. I think, as a general rule, it's worth reminding ourselves that you don't have conventional tax returns in IHT. You only have a return to make to the revenue, the delivery of an account, as it's traditionally been called, when something happens. Now, I'll come on to the administration at another time, but I just want to make that point. You don't have to do sort of regular tax returns. Okay, so we've got somebody who's died, they've got their 325, but it's got to be smeared across all the gifts, the chargeable gifts in the 7 years up to death and the death estate itself. I think another point to make about the nil rate band is that since December 2007, it's been possible, as far as spouses and civil partners are concerned, for the person who is the second death. Let's take a very simple example. Dad died a few years ago and now mum's died. That mum will not only have her £325,000 nil rate band, but she'll also be able to use, get this bit, the unused proportion of dad's nil rate band. Now, what that means is that mum potentially on her death, where the current nil rate band is 325, could, in theory, have not only her 325, but if, say, dad left everything when he died to her, then the unused proportion of his nil rate band is 100%. And therefore, you roll it forward, it sort of gathers value as it rolls forward, and mum can therefore have two lots of 325,000. What you don't do in that circumstance is to say, well, the nil rate band would have been, say, 250 when dad died, therefore we can have mum's 325 and dad's 250. Doesn't work like that. Dad's, as it were, inflates with in time value. So mum can use the unused proportion, and she uses the current nil rate band, which is quite helpful. So in a perfectly theoretical world, mum could have two lots of 325, so 650 there, depending upon the circumstances, but only when the second death was on or after, I think it was the 7th of December 2007. Okay, so that's the basic shape there on death. Now, there are lots of things in there, but in this introductory podcast, I'm just going to be looking at the simple stuff. Let's now move from death gifts to life gifts, because these were very often asked about. And I've done a blog recently on that, but because this is a slightly different beastie, I just want to make sure we've covered the ground So I'm now going to have a very quick look at lifetime giving as part of estate planning. Okay, I think it's worth, and this is a very crude distinction, but it'll sort of do to get us going. There are some lifetime gifts which are generally considered to be small, and therefore, in the great scheme of things within IHT, they are ignored. And then there are bigger gifts of cash, and the other normal suspect in there is a gift of a house. The big two, cash, big cash, and houses. And I'll come on to those in just a second. So in this very crude but useful to get us going distinction, lifetime gifts, small lifetime gifts, are widely used. The most well-known, of course, is the so-called annual exemption there of £3,000 per person. And if you haven't used it, you can roll it forward for 1 year only. So if you haven't made lifetime gifts of any sort in, say, the last few years, then you can not only use £3,000 this year, but you can have last year's on the basis that it was unused and therefore rolled forward. So you could, in those circumstances, make a gift of £6,000. And just be clear about the IHT implications of that. What that means is that the £6,000 is not regarded as a transfer of your estate. It's there to allow grandparents, say, typically to give some of their estate away. And you can use that for whatever purpose. And it's either standalone, you can make somebody a gift, you can make a number of gifts, it can be to one or more persons. So that's the first one, the annual exemption. And of course, that is per individual. And as the point I made in my blog, which I'd just like to reinforce here, is that if you've got, say, grandma and granddad, they can both make these annual gifts. And very often you'll get in a sort of granddad-grandma situation, one of them has got the money and the other one hasn't. So if mum's mum died and she's got some money in her bank account, say from her mother's estate, and she's not yet spent it, and granddad has a pension but no capital, it's perfectly good for grandma to give granddad some money and then he can make these annual gifts. And the reason that works is because spousal gifts, and indeed civil partner gifts now, are regarded as being totally exempt, not just for CGT, which is what we're not looking at here, but also for IHT. So the £3,000 annual exemption is widely used and is very useful. Now, there are some other gifts that you can make too. There's gifts in consideration of a marriage. In other words, if the marriage doesn't happen, then the gift becomes ineffective under that relief. And you can give according to the relationship that you have with the person who's getting married. So mum, for example, could give £5,000 to her daughter in consideration of her daughter's marriage, whereas a grandparent could only give £2,500 and anybody else can only give £1,000. So that's the basic shape on the marriage exemption. But also within the lifetime gifts, which are widely used, are what I call kind of the grandma's gifts. These are the so-called small gifts exemptions, and they allow any person to give up to £250 per donee, that's the recipient, per annum. And it's a one-off gift. It's up to £250. So this would allow grandma to give all of her grandchildren and, say, her godchildren gifts each of £250 at, say, Christmas. Okay, so that's the small gifts exemption. The other one, which is not widely understood, is the gifts out of the normal patterns of income. And what I mean by that is that if you have got reasonable income and you make regular gifts out of that income and your lifestyle is not affected as a result of those gifts, then those gifts are going to be regarded as exempted from the sort of the normal IHT rules. So you can get rid of some of your estate in this sort of pattern of normal giving out of normal income. What that doesn't allow you to do is to give a thumping great gift in 1 year, which kind of impoverishes you for the rest of that year, because that's not going to be a sort of a out of normal income. So you can give some of your estate away. And of course, the richer you are, the more you can give away under that particular head. If you're in financial services and you're earning £250,000 a year, then you can obviously give quite a bit away as part of as a pattern of giving out of your normal income. But if you're on the average salary in the UK of around about £24,000, then you can give a few hundred away without affecting your lifestyle. But anything more than that is going to affect your lifestyle. Okay, well, that's a review of the lifetime gifts, and very useful. We should always put those in front of our clients, just so that they're aware that they can use these gifts on a regular basis to get some of their estate away. Now, what about the bigger gifts? We said that the two sort of suspects are houses and cash. We're still talking, remember, about lifetime giving. So, what are the IHT effects? Well, if you give away a big gift, cash or a house, then for IHT purposes, that is regarded as being a potentially exempt transfer, a PET, as it's known in the trade. And it only becomes fully exempt and therefore ignored for IHT purposes if the donor survives the magic 7-year period. And if the donor dies within that 7-year period, then there will be tax to pay. And get this one, this is the one to put in front of your clients, the tax will be borne by the recipient of the gift. It's always the donee that pays the tax in a PET situation if the donor dies within 7 years. Now, there are some reliefs in there. There's a beastie called taper relief, which sort of reduces the pain, but only if the donor has survived at least 3 years. If the donor does not survive 3 years, then that gift, in effect, becomes taxable. And just to reinforce the point, it's the donee of the gift, the recipient, who pays the tax on it. So there you go. There's some stuff on that. And that's the IHT angle. So you can give away cash, you can give away a house. I'll come back to a house in just a second. The IHT immediate effect is that those are going to be pets. Now, just looking on the radar, it's not just IHT. And I just very quickly like to remind you about the CGT angles here. And although we're not talking about CGT, if you dispose of a house, there won't just be the IHT to think about. There's going to be the CGT as well. Now, it could be that if mum, say, gives a house away to the daughter because she's moving away to France to live her declining years, and the house has been her house for as many years as we care to remember, then any gain on that house will, of course, be covered by the PPR relief. But the effective message, the immediate message, is that when mum gifts a house in lifetime, that's a disposal for CGT purposes. So that's a house. The other point I'd just like to make here is that if the pet itself is not a house, but it's cash, just say mum's given, instead of a house, she gives £50,000, £100,000 to one or more of her children, then as far as the IHT is concerned, that's still a pet. But for CGT purposes, cash, of course, is not a chargeable asset, and we don't have anything to worry about as far as CGT is concerned. Okay, now, some lifetime gifts are going to be covered by reliefs, and we will be covering those in a subsequent podcast. The obvious relief, of course, which applies to businesses, will be business property relief, BPR. And its country cousin, agricultural property relief. And again, these can exempt up to 100% of the gift, depending upon the circumstances. And they're generally, very generally, 100%. Although far from universally. I just also like to make the point that these two major reliefs, the BPR and the APR, are available in both life and death. Now, we're only talking here about the circumstances of lifetime giving, but if, say, I left my farm to my children, I left it to them in my will, then that would be covered by APR, principally agricultural property relief. It wouldn't incidentally cover things like the tractors. That would have to be topped up. I always think of this as being a top-up mechanism by the provisions of the business property relief provisions. Now, there are all sorts of conditions you've got to meet for that, but they're generally designed to allow for businesses. We're talking here about sole trades, normal businesses, you know, plumbing, electrical retail, catering, or, you know, the whole gamut of those to be covered by these reliefs. So business property relief, and if it's agricultural, agricultural property relief as well. I just mentioned leaving my farm to my children. There is a sort of a hint here for tax planning and estate planning, and I think it's just worth thinking about that for a second before we move on. If I was to give my farm to my children in lifetime, although I wouldn't have an IHT issue, I would still, do you take the point, have CGT to consider. And I'd need to at least take my hat off and pay homage to the fact that I need to ask that question. Are there going to be any CGT implications? Now, the short answer is yes, there would be CGT because I'd be getting rid of a business asset. But there are some reliefs that are available which, as it were, cross-fertilise across the boundary between the two capital taxes. And I will be dealing with those in another podcast. But it is possible to get deferral on the CGT because of the way that the IHT interacts. But a little bit more of that down the road. Now, just to finish this basic start here on IHT, we did talk at the beginning about giving away the house as a mechanism for trying to avoid care home fees. And I'd just like to reinforce as we come down to the end that there are two things in play here, and I'm only covering on this podcast the IHT bit. Now, clearly, if somebody, say granddad, fearing that, you know, he's not long for independent living and may have to go into a care home, he talks to his children and says, look, I want to get the home away into your name, then that is clearly going to be a pet as far as IHT is concerned. But there are a couple of things that I need to remind you about. The first, and importantly, is that if dad gifts the house and then remains in the house, then that is going to be ineffective as far as IHT is concerned, because that pet is going to be supplanted, is going to be overridden by another set of rules which are known as the gift with reservation rules, which means effectively that it won't be recognised for IHT purposes. And again, I'll be talking about gifts with reservation in a future podcast. And I'd just like to finish by focusing on the care home issue and the local authority. Now, people will clearly do that, and different local authorities will have different rules. But I don't think we can make the general assumption that if you get it away, it will work for both IHT and it'll also work as far as avoiding the care home fees are concerned. There are some quite good stuff on the DirectGov website on care home fees. And if you go to your local county authority, they will also have quite good stuff on how they assess people in care homes as to whether they're going to be self-funders or because they've got enough assets, or whether they're going to be assisted by the local authority. But as I said, that's a very, very difficult area. And it's not one that I can cover within this podcast because I'm clearly looking at IHT things here. Okay, well, that'll do us for a start. As I said, I'll be talking to you later in the year and quite soon. are on the second part of this, but I just wanted to get us going in this first podcast, thinking about, you know, the scope of IHT. And in the next podcast, we're going to be looking at some of the finer details. And I very much look forward to talking to you then. But until then, cheerio.